You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Freaking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman. That right there. See ya, Najad. See ya. Whew. No days off, bud. Let's go.
No days off and no hangover, Rick. I want to shoo away this sentiment that, okay, it's a tournament after a major. We don't need to be quite as excited. No, we need to be quite as excited, if not more so. Let's get after it, man. There's just as much money to win this week as there was last week. Or, I mean, maybe technically not. There's not as many tournaments offered. But you know what I mean, Rick. Let's go.
You know what used to bother me a lot more? I mean, it doesn't bother me as much anymore. But it used to bother me a lot when years ago, like, content creators would be like, well, you know, this is the fall portion of the schedule. Like, I'll just see you guys in January. And I'm like, that's like 13 events that you're skipping. How could you skip 13 events? But I've grown older and stopped caring about that.
Yeah, I get it. At the end of the day, though, I really am excited about this, Rick. I mean, this is a field that I don't really think I was expecting. I mean, if I was looking back 3 months ago and kind of picturing what the field would be after the PGA Championship, I don't think I would have seen this talent. I wouldn't have thought I would have seen this talent.
Yeah, I mean, going from Tulsa to Fort Worth is not a long trip. And with the kind of history that we have around Colonial and this event, as of right now, it's a stacked field. I still think we're going to get a WD or two coming down the pipeline. We'll see. But I mean, we'll go through this in a second, but Scotty Scheffler, Justin Thomas, Colin Morikawa, Jordan Spieth. I mean, it's a fairly stacked field.
Oh yeah. It's not a fairly stacked field, Rick. It's a stacked field. I mean, we've got, and you know, what's cool about that, by the way, is that therefore the pricing is a little soft and you can get, there's a lot of talent in the 7K range, even a little bit in the 6K range. So you can really get the lineup that you want. Now, the next question is, you know, what's ownership going to be? Where do you want to pivot and things of that nature? But yeah, I've made a few lineups, as everybody knows, and they, you know, they're looking pretty good. But, you know, Monday when they look pretty good, talk to me on Friday.
Quick announcement before I forget. The fan voting for the one and done is now open. I assume there is a link in the description. We've been tweeting it out. And Sia, we are going very, very bright and early on Tuesday morning. So those selections from the fans need to actually be in earlier. So if you're listening to me right now, just go do it right now. Don't wait, because we are going at, I think, 10 a.m. Eastern time on Tuesday. We're going to roll out of bed. I'm on the West Coast. I'm going to roll out of bed and we are going to lock those one and dones in. So the fans should not wait. Oh, no. Do we have you on mute?
There, if you wait, sorry, Rick, you are going to be beset with whoever I pick, which, you know, is bad news.
Just the straight mush. If they miss out, they have to take whoever Sia takes. That's actually really good.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the course, and I'll share my screen here. So this is my website, rickrungood.com. It's everything I'll be showing you on YouTube. Colonial Country Club, longest non-major course event combination. It's like 75 years in a row or something outrageous like that. And so obviously, Sia, the data that we have is really good, really strong, because we have such a great time frame. It's generally played the same time of year. And what you'll kind of notice, I believe, as the biggest contrast to last week, is a lot more tree-lined fairways, where hitting the ball into the fairway, being accurate off the tee, seems much more advantageous than maybe even just looking back 1 week.
Yeah, and trees aside, the rough will certainly be more penal as well. So we're going to hear a word a lot this week, positional. I mean, this is definitely a positional golf course where you're going to have a lot of guys that you might deem sort of inaccurate off the tee, that maybe that's not as significant this week because they're going to be clubbing down. So, you know, you get it in the fairway and then you really have to hone in on the approach game, which is what I've honed in terms of looking at the class of golfer that I want to choose this week. So approach, putting, I think around the green, I'd like to get your opinion here, Rick, but I think around the green is definitely going to be kind of neutralized a little bit here. Although I think there are competing theories to that when it comes to, quote, easy around the green play. With that said, putting, approach play. That's where I want to be this week.
There are always competing theories. That's kind of the thing. Yeah, I'm of the mindset that you don't have to be great around the green here. The bunkers are fairly straightforward and easy to get out of. There's not a lot of difficult spots around the greens. You mentioned like the fact that there will be rough, kind of like thick rough everywhere. That stuff around the greens is a lot easier for the worst short game players to get up and down from. There's a bigger margin of error there. And then if you want to look at even just the leaderboard from last year, even just the champion from last year, Jason Kokrak lost strokes around the green last year in route to victory. I think 17 of the top 30 guys on the leaderboard lost strokes around the green. It's not going to burn you if you drop a stroke or two in that area. So I'm cool with that. The other thing, if you want to just bend the knee to the numbers, driving accuracy, much more important, or at least much more correlated to success over the years than driving distance was. And then the par threes that you have, see, are all over 190 yards. Three of them play about in the 190s. One of them can be stretched out to like 245, something outrageous like that, which is where we've seen a lot of through lines of champions. Some of these guys that play the long par threes really well, Jason Kokrak is one of them. Zach Johnson is one of them. Daniel Berger is one of them. I mean, they account for four victories at Colonial. So I think there's a through line in being able to take advantage of, or at least survive, the longer threes.
Yeah. And I think if you want to build that into your model, that certainly makes sense. You know, par three scoring, or particularly the par threes of the length that we're talking about. So yeah, I think that's something I'm definitely going to look at, but it's definitely going to be secondary to sort of some of those like baseline metrics that we talked about.
The other thing, don't forget, the horrible horseshoe is here. So the first two holes, very easy, very gettable, two of the easiest holes on the golf course, and they smack you in the face at 3, 4, and 5. That's the horrible horseshoe. It's one of these three-hole stretches and that are very difficult, and we've seen that 6 or 7 times on the schedule. Sia, I've been coming up with this idea. I think they should take 3 very easy holes and brand those holes like the go zone, or like, you know, something. Why are the 3-hole stretches that have names always the hard stretches? They should be the holes that these guys are going to take apart.
That's a great point. And by the way, go zone is awesome. Can we do that? Rick, listen, you're an ambassador to the sport. Let's implement that for a 3-hole, or we don't even have to go by the 3 standard. Maybe it's a 4-hole or a 2-hole stretch.
Yeah. Maybe it's a 9-hole stretch. Who cares? We're going rogue here.
Go zone rolls off the tongue. Like, I expect you to have a course fitting for that term very soon.
All right, well, I'll put that on the list as well. Okay, I want to dive into the cheat sheet, go tier by tier here, and start talking through some of the plays, because as mentioned, it's a really, really great field. We will do that, but first we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And we're back. Here's the cheat sheet. Six golfers over $10,000 led by Scottie Scheffler at 11,200, fresh off a miscut at the PGA Championship. Justin Thomas, flat 11,000, fresh off a victory at the PGA Championship. Colin Morikawa is 10-7. Jordan Spieth is 10-4. Will Zalatoris, 10,100. And at a flat $10,000, one Victor Hovland. Sia Nejad, how do we go about breaking down the top of the board?
Yeah, as usual, a lot to like here. It's hard to offer criticism to really any of these guys. I will say my favorite lineup that I've built so far, and just for perspective, I'm building like single entry, three max type entries. My favorite lineup started in the 9K range, and we'll talk about a couple of the golfers that it featured. But up here, I think there's probably two golfers that I have kind of circled, and Jordan Spieth is one of them. I love his history here. I love what he does well. Okay, first of all, I don't know that I can say the putter is something he does well right now, but we know he can do well there. And the approach game, ball striking and the approach game have been really good with Jordan Spieth. So yeah, he lost over three strokes putting yet again. What do you think, Rick? What pattern are we looking at here?
So I've actually been getting my newsletter up and running for this week, and I've been diving into this because this is horrible. We talk about the horrible horseshoe. This is horrible from yes. Jordan Spieth right here, the way he's been putting. But I actually believe this is good. I don't think he's remotely close to his ceiling. I don't know if it's good. I just don't think he's remotely close to his ceiling when you are literally, you know, last 24 rounds, I bet you he's one of the best ball strikers in the field. He's fifth or sixth over the last 24, and you're putting the worst you've ever putted, and you still have a win and a runner-up and all that fun stuff. Here's the little nugget, Sia, and I'll bounce this right back to you. Because if there was ever a time for Jordan Spieth to get right, it might be at Colonial. Because of every course that Jordan Spieth has played at least 10 rounds on, he has gained more strokes putting at Colonial than any other course. Is this the opportunity for him to break out of a slump and putt well?
Yeah, I love that stat. And I do love Jordan Spieth here. I mean, it feels like a home game for him to some degree. Obviously, it's in Texas. I don't know if it really is.
So it's Fort Worth to Dallas. That's pretty close, right?
That's Fort adjacent. Worth? That's yeah, the same or, thing, basically.
Like the metro area, right?
Yeah. So with that said, I mean, he's coming in with good form. Last week wasn't great down the stretch, but listen, you know, if you look at the second, 10th, and 8th place finish over the last 3 years, we have to keep in mind two of those 3 years, he wasn't playing well at all. So, I mean, it's interesting that the quote home cooking really works for him even when his game is off. And I think you can probably translate that to the putter to some degree as well. So, yeah, I mean, I think in this range, Jordan Spieth is definitely my favorite guy. I would probably say my second favorite guy is Victor Hovland. Mm-hmm. You know, Scottie Scheffler's interesting. I think I would probably be okay with him if his ownership happened to be low. But I don't think it's going to be low enough for me to want to take him. I mean, his history here isn't great. He's coming off a miscut. None of that worries me too much, but I do like Jordan Spieth and Victor Hovland better.
I don't usually declare it Victor week because I bet him every time he tees it up, so I generally don't have to make those decisions. I think it's Victor week. So the skill sets that he has, the best parts of his game, I believe are magnified. He gets to drive it well. He gets to be a great ball striker on a place that you've got to be accurate, and he's accurate and long, and he can take advantage of the second shot. And then the worst part of his game, the around the green play, which, by the way, for all the conversation about him chipping himself out of it last week, gained strokes around the green. So props, hat tip to Victor Hovland. That part of his game, I don't think, is going to be as critical around Colonial. And then you start looking into, you know, the long par three stuff. Victor's name's on that list. He's played well at this event before. There's also a through line. Again, it's a little anecdotal, but you can get into guys that are going to end up having a lot of long-term success at Colonial, are going to play holes 3, 4, and 5 very well. Victor, in his one trip, played them very well, gained a ton of strokes to the field. So I just think that when you start checking off the boxes for strengths and weaknesses, this seems to be one of the better spots on the schedule for him.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think this is, you know, these stars kind of emerge and then kind of fall flat or flatten out a little bit and then reemerge. I do think it's time for Victor Hovland to start emerging. The one guy I wanted to comment on, though, and I don't know how much this was talked about last week, but if you recall, Colin Morikawa, and I don't know if you heard this, Rick, I don't remember anybody sort of talking about it, but he changed his putter, or not his putter, but his putting style after the Zurich, after playing with Victor Hovland, of all people. He actually put a line on his golf ball, and he was talking about it in his press conference, I believe Wednesday afternoon, before we teed off at the PGA Championship. And he was basically just talking about how he's made the change, and he wished he had more time to work with it, but so far, so good. And I got a little worried about that, you know, entering the PGA Championship. And I wonder how he feels and how that's going to manifest itself here. Like, I think Morikawa is a great course fit here. I just kind of want your opinion on that. I mean, I don't trust the putter with Colin, but I certainly don't trust the fact that he's changing things around, and it didn't seem to work out for him at the PGA Championship.
Yeah. So I do worry that, you know, he got to a point last year where he was still losing strokes putting, but he would gain 3.5 in a week, or he would gain 4, and then he'd lose 3. Like, we're not necessarily seeing a lot of the popping recently. It's like twice since CJ Cup. The one thing I will note, and I did not hear that about Colin Morikawa, but if you remember, he's usually a quick learner. So I think the last time we saw him put a new something into his putting stroke was Riviera of 2021, which is when he lost 7.5 strokes putting. And everyone was like, oh my God, he's broken. I think he went to that like claw grip that he was working with Marco Mira. And everyone was like, oh, he's broken. This is horrible. The next week he gained 4 strokes putting and won the WGC the workday. So I think he's a quick learner. He will likely be an ownership play when I start to see what happens with Scottie Scheffler and what happens with the guys in our playoff from last week. There's a fascinating situation that I think is brewing with ownership in the $10,000 range.
And does that pertain to Justin Thomas and Will Zalatoris?
I assume, and right or wrong, I assume people will play Victor and they will play Spieth almost exclusively. Mm-hmm. And they will shy away from Thomas, who won last week, which is crazy, but you know the narrative. And they'll shy away from Zalatoris, you know, a draining major championship playoff. I think I'm most interested in what people do with Scotty, right? Like $11,200 for the number one golfer in the world who just missed a cut that wasn't all that bad. Right. Remember when Will Zalatoris missed the cut at Byron Nelson and we were like, that's fine. It was a good missed cut. He gained like 3 strokes on approach. Well, Scotty was great on approach. He was kind of bad, lost a stroke off the tee, lost less than that around the green, and lost a stroke with the putter. This is not a bad missed cut here.
And oh, by the way, he was on the wrong side of the wave. I mean, there was a distinct difference there. So, I mean, if he was on, let's say, the quote, correct side of the wave, I think you can look at these numbers and safely say that they all would have improved at least nominally enough for him to make the cut.
I will likely convince myself, and especially as the week goes on and we start to see the ownership numbers roll in, that to just buy low on Scotty here.
Yeah, and it's easy to do because you can fit Scotty in with let's say a 9K guy that you really like, or you know, honestly, you could even dip down to the 8K range from there, but you can do the Scotty thing with a 9K guy and then still be in that low 7K range in terms of how much you have left for your other 4 golfers. And so it's up to you what you want to do with that, because the low 7K range, we'll get to that, but it's not necessarily as rich as the high 7K range. But if you find somebody in the 6K, well, then all of a sudden you have about 7,500 left for 3 golfers, and you can kind of flirt with that 7K range however you want. So it is not prohibitive to get Scotty and a 9K guy in your lineup.
All right, let's talk about the 9K guys. Sam Burns is 9,700, Max Homa, 94, Abraham Anser, 9,300, Sung Jae-in back in action at 92, Tony Finau is 9,100, and Daniel Berger rounds out our group at a flat $9,000. See, I've got 2 names that I care about. I've got 2 that are like fine, and I've got 1 that I don't think I can touch. Where do you want to start?
Well, I know the two. The 2 names you care about have to be Sam Burns and Max Homa.
That's one of them. It's more Max Homa than Burns. I think I'm just pretty neutral on Sam Burns this week at 97.
Okay, so the other guy you really like, it's not Finau, it's not Sungjae, so it's between Anser and Berger, and I'm gonna say it's Berger.
I'm intrigued by Berger. It's Sungjae. It's Homa and Sungjae here. So Homa, I don't think we need to dive too deep into. He's been a phenomenal ball striker. He's got 2 wins this season. He's got like all the metrics are there. And you know, the last couple, like when you see Homa on a course that kind of asks you to be accurate and like TPC Potomac. Oh yeah, he won there. Like Riviera. Oh, by the way, just like I'll go win there. Like he's very, very good and underrated. Sungjae though, Sia, and I'd love your opinion on this. We haven't seen him. So he goes to play on the Korean PGA the week before the PGA Championship, tests positive for COVID, withdraws from the KPGA event, and withdraws from the PGA Championship. So we haven't seen him since the Zurich. We haven't seen him play a individual event since the RBC Heritage, but he was trending, right? These are great advanced metrics for an 8th place finish at the Masters, for a T21 at the Heritage. He finishes 14th with, I think it was Benny On at the Zurich. Like this was a trend, and we just kind of got stopped cold, and now we haven't seen him play in a month.
Cold. I see what you did there. I don't know. So here's the thing. I feel like I need a little bit more information about Sungjae. But to your point, if he's here and everything looks like all systems go, and he happens to be low, like he's definitely going to be lower ownership than almost every guy in the 9K range. He might even be the lowest owned guy.
I think so.
I mean, I don't think that's a stretch at all. So yeah, as an ownership play, as a leverage play off of, I mean, listen, Max Homa is going to be like, you can't look at Max Homa's numbers and be like, yeah, I don't want to play that guy. He hasn't lost on approach since February. And by the way, like some of those approach gains are in like kind of incredible, like these like super spike weeks. And of course, everybody's going to want to play Sam Burns, in my opinion, for good reason. That approach putting game, he can really put that together. So I like him quite a bit. So I like the Sungjae pivot. I don't know if I'm going to do it, but I don't mind it.
The last 24 rounds, Max Homa is a better ball striker than Victor Hovland. He's a better ball striker than everyone in this field. It's actually kind of interesting. They're very, very similar. They're gaining exactly the same number of strokes on approach. Homa is 4/100ths of a stroke per round better off the tee. Homa is slightly worse around the greens, and Homa's a much better putter. Like it's, why does no one talk about Max Homa like they should be talking about him?
That's a good question. But I do listen. If you start, and I'm doing it now, if you start your lineup with Victor Hovland and Max Homa, which I think is a fine start, it leaves you with 7,650 the rest of the way. I'm just putting that out there. I think the low 10K range and a 9K guy are a really good way to start your lineup. And I also think 2 9K guys are a really good way to start your lineup.
Who else in this 9K range would you prefer to roll out?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned Sam Burns. Again, I'm looking for the spike in approach and putter, and we know he can do that. The approach play has been a little more erratic than I would like with Sam Burns as of late, but those are the two guys I like the most. Honestly, in the 9K range, I don't think I'm really going to get involved with Abraham Answer. I think he's a fine course fit, but I just, looking at the upside of him relative to everybody, well, certainly Burns and Homa, but Even Sungjae, if Sungjae is in his optimal game, I think the upside just is a little bit capped relative to those guys. So I'm not interested in him. I don't think I'm interested in Berger unless he happens to be very low owned. I'm not so sure. I think he's going to be lower owned, but at 9K, I think people are going to try to fit him into their lineup a little bit.
I'm just happy to see that Sam Burns played well in a major championship. Was that best finish ever? It had to have been, right? Yeah, it was. Okay.
Yeah.
20th at the PGA, gained 4 strokes on approach. That's what you wanted to see, because he's got these wins on the PGA Tour and he had nothing of note essentially in major championships. So good sign there from Sam Burns. I'm quite worried about Tony Finau. I don't know if I should be, and it's still all relative because he is in basically his worst. This is his worst season since 2016. And that is still good, right? Like he's gaining a half a stroke to the field, which still makes him a top, I don't know, 60 player on tour, something like that. But he is nowhere near as long. If you go look at the driving distance numbers, Sia, for the first 6 years of his career, he's top 10 every single year. Now he's like 85th. He's never hit it straight. I'm like kind of worried that, we're on a downturn here.
I hear you, but the good news for that, just from a length standpoint, is that he doesn't need to be long here, and yeah. and he can spike on approach. I mean, just looking at the last three rounds, I mean, he gained two, he lost seven, and then he gained eight. So he's just like a more volatile version of Sam Burns at this point, maybe without some of the putting prowess. I agree with you, though. I don't know that he has the upside that we're looking for, especially when you look at the other guys in this range. So again, with Tony Finau, he's never going to be a super low owned play. So I don't even want to make the leverage comment because people are just going to want to use him here and there. So yeah, I'm probably out on Tony Finau.
These aren't red flags, but these are just like a bunch of yellow flags that I'm like, oh man, I don't know. I'm worried that someone to keep a close eye on moving forward. Certainly. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's continue down the board here because the $8,000 range offers up some good options as well. We'll get to those as well as the sevens and the sixes. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Tailored Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Tailored Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Tailored Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Tailored Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Tailored Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Tailored Brands.
And we're back. $8,000 range, Sia. Gooch, Fleetwood, Simpson, Mito Pereira, Billy Horschel. Then we round out the bottom with Davis Riley, Bryson DeChambeau, Jason Kokrak, and Kevin Na. Bubba Watson has withdrawn from this event, so I will remove him from the cheat sheet. I think he said he was playing on a torn meniscus, and he's going to be out 3 or 4 weeks. See, I'm no doctor, but that sounds painful.
Yeah, that doesn't sound great. Nice showing from him last week. I don't know, when did he say that happened?
Like he said he's been playing with it, I think.
Wow. Okay. So, that's amazing. Okay. So there's a lot of guys to like in the 8K range. I'll mention a few. First of all, we were on him last week. Taylor Gooch, I think, is starting to round into form. And the price at 8,900, it's actually a little higher than I thought it would have been, but he's got good history here. He's been a top 25 machine lately, in spite of the fact that he just hasn't been super great. Again, the approach is rounding back into form. The putter can spike. I think I'm wondering what his ownership is going to be, but I don't see it being super high. And in that case, I think Gooch is a pretty smart play.
There's so much that you can learn or just kind of glean from looking at the results and thinking through this, right? I mean, the guy misses the cut to Byron Nelson when he was fairly popular, loses 2.3 strokes on approach, but it's his first start in nearly a month, knocks the rust off, immediately goes out, plays well at the PGA Championship. Like, I have, looking back, zero concern about that Byron Nelson week. It's just such an outlier that you can write it off. And actually, he's been much better off the tee in short recent form than kind of we've seen. So I agree. We might be on the uptick of Taylor Gooch here.
Yeah. So I'm good with him. Another guy that I don't think you can say a bad word about when you look at the metrics, and I'm kind of referring back to Max Homa when I say that, but Tommy Fleetwood, like I have a feeling Fleetwood's going to be really popular because it's going to be hard to look at these metrics. I mean, the ball striking and the putter have been great. He's gained on approach 6 out of the last 7, which I think would surprise some people. The short game has been amazing. He's gained around the green in 9 out of the last 10, and with the putter, 7 out of the last 9. Basically, what I told you is he's gaining everywhere, including last week. So I at 8,800, you know, I think he's starting to become that sort of sexy name again where people really want to play Tommy Fleetwood. And I feel like I'm a little late to the party. And so if ownership is really high, I'm happy to just jump on to somebody else's bandwagon. But if it's not prohibitively high, I think Tommy Fleetwood is a great play.
This is easily the best golf we've seen from him since the shutdown. So that was like February to June of 2020. So we're talking about 2 years. This is easily the best golf we've seen. I agree he will be popular. Not only does he have the great finishes, but the gaining across the board at the PGA Championship in a very public spot where Tommy was one of the few guys who was charging on Sunday. He will be popular. It'll be for good reason. Davis Riley must have gotten words of advice from Will Zalatoris at the Zurich, because since they've played together, he's gone 4th, 5th, 9th, 13th, and that 13th was the PGA Championship. He does it in a really sustainable way. But let's talk about the big boy.
Wow.
Bryson DeChambeau. I looked this up. Cheapest he's been in like 2 years. Are you going to try to buy low on old beefy Bryson?
Wow. So I feel like I need a little bit more information. I mean, obviously he needs to confirm that he's going to play, like on Wednesday, for example.
I'm actually not sure he will play. Remember, he went through 3 practice rounds at Southern Hills, even tweeted out like, well, it held up well today, and then withdrew saying he wasn't ready. I was under the impression he was going to, and I think he might have said this, that he was going to try to make it back for the Memorial. But I think he's going to try the same thing where he goes out, he's going to play practice rounds, because this is very close to where he lives. This is there's no travel involved for him. So there's no risk involved in this, where I think he's going to play some practice rounds and see how it feels. So yes, with the caveat, see that there's a chance he doesn't even play. If he does play, do we play him?
So I think the answer is no. As much as I want to be like really cute and like really like super smart and ahead of the curve, like I want to say, yeah, this is the time to play him, but it's not. That like that's the thing. I need to see a little bit more. When we want to get in early on somebody, I think this is like way too early. If you put all the sort of the facts that we know about his injury and how much he's played and practiced, I just don't see it. I mean, it's 8,300, so that's all well and good, and he can kind of harken back to his more like precise style of play before he got big on this particular course. But I don't see it with him.
All right. Can I tell you what the absolute best case scenario is here? Bryson plays, he misses the cut, but he gains like 2 strokes off the tee. He loses strokes and enough to miss the cut like around the green where he always loses them, which is not that big of a deal. And like the stuff that would be rust, you could chalk up to rust. And then when we get the Memorial field that gets injected with another 20 golfers who are great and Bryson is still the same price or cheaper, like then we're early. I think next week's the time.
That's right. Because to your point, if that scenario plays out, he's going to be lower priced, but he's not going to be popular again. People just aren't going to want to do it. And so that would be the time to play him. I agree.
I just want to see like that flat. I want to see that driver again. Gain me 2 strokes off the tee. I don't care what else he does. The bottom of this range has 2 past champions. Our defending champion, Jason Kokrak's 8,200, who has not only won this event, but he also finished 3rd in 2020. And then Kevin Na, who won it in 2019, finished 4th in 2018, missed the cut in 2020, and then finished 32nd last year. I'm kind of just like lukewarm on both of these guys, Sia. I see the merits. If they end up making my lineups, that's great. I will not go out of my way to get access to them, but I'm cool with it.
Yeah, and I think they'll be reasonably popular just because of how they're priced at 8,100, 8,200, given their course history here. I am also lukewarm on them. I think this is going to be a tournament where I'm going to be doing a lot more kind of pivoting than maybe I would normally do. And so I think you brought up a guy, Davis Riley, who honestly I wasn't big on last week. So that just kind of, you know, that door got slammed on my face. But I think Davis Riley and Billy Horschel are going to be interesting pivots. I know when we get to like an approach course, people kind of shy away from Billy Horschel. They want to see maybe a little bit better metrics. but Horschel's been really good. And he was on the bad side of the wave last week. He missed the cut, right? Billy missed the cut, right?
No, he did not, but he finished 68th. Might as well have missed the cut. He made the cut on the number, and then it didn't get much better after that.
So slightly impressive that he made the cut, you know, under, you know, worse conditions, I guess. But I think Billy Horschel and Davis Riley are interesting pivots. But otherwise, I'm not really interested in this range beyond Taylor Gooch, Tommy Fleetwood. And I may, and Rick, I want to get your opinion here. I may go right back to Mito Pereira. What are your thoughts?
I thought about it.
I haven't decided.
At least if you talk about like the hangover effect, at least he's cheaper than the other guys. And we know what Mito is. We talk about Mito a lot. He's awesome. And I really don't know. I mean, it's easy to say that he took it in stride in his interviews afterwards. I don't know how he woke up this morning, right? I don't know how he was feeling when he woke up this morning, but I like the idea that he's getting out there and just playing again. Like, don't dwell on it. Just go play again. So I'm generally cool with it.
Okay. I'm going to ask you a question that you're going to hate because you're so data driven, but I just feel like, let's just have some fun. Let me ask like the three guys that were really involved down the stretch yesterday. I mean, obviously there were other guys involved, but Will Zalatoris, Mito Pereira, and Justin Thomas, who ended up winning, of course, which rank those three in terms of how negatively last week or the PGA Championship would affect their game this week. In other words, the first person you put is most negatively affected by what happened at the PGA Championship.
Mito is most negatively affected. JT is second most negatively affected because not only does he have the emotion, but like when you ascend the mountaintop, it is hard to reset and try to reascend the mountaintop when we are like 23 days away from the US Open. And he's probably thinking about that. And he probably celebrated. And he also had a ton of media obligations and he will continue to. So he is second most negatively impacted. Will Zalatoris, I could argue, is not that negatively impacted because one, he made a putt to get into a playoff, which I think he can glean a lot of confidence from. He did not lose the playoff. JT just beat him. He did not have the media obligations. And also, he gets to go to Texas, get back home, get a little boost of energy. Like I think Zalatoris, like I would be 0% surprised if he just won this thing.
It's a perfectly acceptable answer, but it's incorrect, Rick, because the ranking, of course, is Mito, Zalatoris, and then JT. I think JT just fell into a win. He didn't have the stress down the stretch that Will Zalatoris and Mito Pereira had. He didn't think he was going to win. He was just playing good golf, and then all of a sudden, oh, I'm in a playoff. Let me just go out and win this. And he's like a killer. I know he doesn't have the major record to sort of justify me saying that, but I could absolutely see him coming out here and just forgetting about last week and just racking up another victory.
All right, well, We'll let the chat break the tie there and let us know who the correct rankings of most to least negatively affected from last week. $7,000 range, sizable. I will not read all of these. Chris Kirk, Gary Woodland at the top, Brian Harman, Harold Varner III, Justin Rose. The bottom of the $7,000 range, David Lipsky, Brendan Todd, Emiliano Grillo, James Hahn, Matt Jones. So lots of names here, Sia. How do we want to go about allocating our dollars?
Yeah, so many really good names to choose from. I'll start at the top. There's two guys at the top that I really like, one of which I really liked last week. He was only 6,900 last week. That's Chris Kirk. He gained over 10 strokes tee to green last week, and that's already like he was already coming into good form into the PGA Championship. So I don't even really need to go back further than that. Being 6,900 last week at the PGA Championship was definitely like a huge value. So I like him at 7,900. I mean, we're looking at it now. What's not to like? Obviously, the putter can fail him, but we know historically he's a pretty good putter. So everything else is just popping.
Yeah, this is pretty good. I think he's got a pretty good record around Colonial as well. Oh, that's right. Yeah, won it in 2015. Spotty otherwise, but he's never missed a cut. He's got the win and he's got four other top 15s. That's pretty solid for Chris Kirk.
And I could make the argument that how he was doing in like 2015, 2016, and I don't want to go back and check here, but I think he was playing better golf then than he was when he played this in like 2020, 2021. So I think Kirk is another good value play. He might be popular. Woodland is another guy that might get some ownership. Mm-hmm. He's got a ninth and a 14th here. He's coming in with pretty good form. There's usually he's susceptible to having like one bad day that kind of gets him off track. But I do like the form he's coming in with and the track record he has here. Going down the line a little bit, I'll just name a few other guys. Sebastian Munoz wasn't very good last week. He made the cut barely on the number, but just the weekend didn't really do much for him. He also has no experience, but I think if ownership is low, I think you've got decent value for a guy who's been very, very good prior to the PGA Championship. Tom Hoagie feels like a pretty good course fit, although his experience here is pretty underwhelming.
That's a weird one because he's a Fort Worth guy. He went to TCU, and I wonder if this is such a corny narrative, and I hate narratives, but a lot, going back to like a place where you know a lot of people has a lot of obligations, where it's tickets and interviews and seeing people you haven't seen. And the fact that he's got two missed cuts and two finishes in the 40s, like maybe it just doesn't work out with him when he goes back to Fort Worth.
Yeah, you might be right. And I almost mentioned him because that doesn't make sense. Like, I feel like he should be pretty good on this course, but to your point, I'm sort of happy to pivot off of him. I think a guy to pivot on to is perhaps Matt McNealy. He's got decent recent form. He's got decent course history here. Feels like a good course fit at 7,500. I think he's a solid play. I don't think he'll gain too much ownership because honestly, that upper 7K range is so rich with guys that honestly I didn't even mention. Like, I think Justin Rose, for example, he's up there. Brian Harman, HV3. All of those guys are really, really good candidates. So I don't think anybody's going to be super chalky up there. It's going to be pretty flat at the upper 7K range.
Yeah, the short list for me is Gary Woodland, Justin Rose, and then Harold Varner III is someone who just pops up everything I slice up. Harold Varner III pops up. Mm-hmm. What I'm showing right now is the last 24 rounds, everybody in this field just strokes gained total. So it's like, who's been the best? And HV3's fifth. It's JT, Burns, Scotty, Will Zalatoris, and HV3. There's also, again, those things I talked about where long par threes, over 190 yards, Varner's number one on tour. Even the results recently, right? Like the T3 at Harbortown, that's a course that asks you to be precise off the tee and accurate instead of long and play positional golf. And that's kind of what we're going to see this week as well. You know, he gains four strokes at the PGA Championship, putts horribly. That's fine. Like, he's probably not going to lose five strokes with the putter again. So I just, however I want to start to assess this and I try different things, Varner's name pops up quite a bit.
Yeah. And I don't mind that play at all. And again, because ownership is going to kind of be, it's going to be high, a little bit elevated in that upper 7K range, but I also think it's going to be kind of flat because there's so many good guys in that 7,800, 7,900 range that I think you can get away with playing HV3. I think he'll have some ownership for sure because I think people are seeing what you're seeing, and his recent form has been pretty solid as well.
Bottom of the range, just kind of clicking through here. Anything catching your eye? I mean, David Lipsky has three top 25 finishes in his last four and four in his last six. But I wish he had some run around Colonial. Anything else catch your eye here?
Yeah, a couple guys. Nate Lashley, for one. He's got decent course history as well. Plenty of upside that we've seen recently with a 17th at the Byron, 11th in Mexico. And I guess he had a withdrawal in between that. I'm trying to recall what that was about.
Yeah, it was a toe injury.
Oh, that's right.
Or at least that's what he cited. I mean, I'm not going to say he wasn't hurt, but they have to give a reason. So it was a toe injury. He played the next week and finished 17th.
Exactly. So I think Nate Lashley is interesting at 7,100. A good guy to maybe just jam into your lineup if you end up down in that range. I don't necessarily want to give up on JJ Spahn quite yet. I will mention that he was in the bad side of the draw last week at the PGA Championship. And I'm not trying to make that like some huge deal, but there was a difference there. I think it's worth pointing out. So I think JJ Spahn is interesting, could be a little bit of a value there as well.
Yeah. So just last 24 rounds of everybody in the 7Ks, HV3, Chris Kirk, Troy Merritt, Matthew Neesmith, Gary Woodland are your top five. JJ Spahn, yes, even with the bad side of the draw, gaining a half a stroke per round during that time frame as well, does it via the ball striking categories, not necessarily the short game categories, which again, probably not the worst thing in the world for this week. Okay, so yeah, the 6Ks. The top of the 6K range, Adam Long, Minwoo Lee, Pat Perez, Patton Kizzire, Russell Knox. The flat $6,000 golfers for this week. Oh, Tyler Strafacci's in the field. Nick Watney, Luke Donald, Eric Compton. That's a good story. Adam Shank. Wow, remember when he was just like the cut master?
He's six flat?
He's actually been pretty good.
That's strange.
Why is he $6,000?
I have no idea. That to me, that seems like a bit of a misprice here.
He's played 6 weeks in a row. So he made the cut last week, finished 10th 2 weeks ago, 14th two before that, 7th three starts before that. I mean, I'm not saying he should be like 8,500, but he shouldn't be $6,000, right?
Yeah, I mean, the metrics aren't like great, but they're not staggeringly bad either to be 6K. I mean, the approach game and, you know, the ball striking in general has been pretty bad, but there are weeks where he, like you mentioned the finishing positions at the Wells Fargo, he gained over 5 ball striking. He certainly has the capability to do that. It's been bad overall, but he can gain with the putter here and there too. So at 6K, I think it's worth a flyer. I also think Luke Donald at 6K is worth a flyer considering his approach game.
Shank is the 15th best player in this $6,000 race. So there are 65 golfers in the $6,000 range. Shank is the 15th best in the last 24 rounds. Donald is the 17th best. They're both min priced.
Yeah, and there's a guy right below them, Austin Smotherman, who's 6,300 that I like. Nick Taylor down there, I also like a little bit. But at the top, that's where I see Tyler Duncan, who I'm usually a pretty big fan of. Brandon Wu, Adam Long, Peter Malnati. I think each of them have pretty great upside. So I will be speculating probably more with Brandon Wu and Adam Long than Peter Malnati, but I think all three of those guys have pretty great upside considering their price.
I like Adam Long. Adam Long's got 2 top 20 finishes here in the last 3 years. He's got 2 top 20 finishes in his last 4 starts. Similar, I'm in on JT Poston. You know, this is 2 top 10 finishes in his last 4, and the 2 top 10s are at places where you've got to be precise off the tee. It's TPC Potomac, it's Harbortown. And then you look at his results at Colonial. He's got 2 top 20s in his last 4 years. He is by no means safe, but I think this is a better setup for him than a lot of other spots on tour.
And I agree. I do want to mention in that low 7K range, a guy that I forgot, you're making the TPC comps. KH Lee's only 7,200, and the form obviously has been pretty great. So I think that's another guy in that low 7K range that probably for whatever reason still won't have much by way of ownership that I think is an interesting play.
No. KH Lee will never carry ownership, which is probably wrong, but it's probably true. Okay. Anybody else in the 6K range? See, I think we even noted softer pricing this week. And even what did we start with? Victor and who was the other guy we started with? And then we had like $7,600 left.
Victor and Homa. And we had 7,650 left.
Yeah, so you might not have to dive too deep down into the $6,000 tier. Last year's optimal was Spieth, Kokrak, and 4 guys in the $7,000 range. So it did not necessarily require you to go down to the sixes, which I thought was kind of interesting.
And I think this year's optimal will be very similar to that. It wouldn't shock me at all if there's 4 guys in the 7K range, is what I'm trying to say, because it's pretty rich. I think maybe one other guy I'd like to mention in that 6K range. I mean, first of all, Sabatini has a good history here, but the metrics don't really tell me much supporting that. Lucas Glover, though, he gained 8 strokes on approach last week. He's got an 8th and a 23rd last 2 times at Colonial. 23rd last week when he was gaining those 8 strokes on approach. I think that's interesting.
That's the glove for you. That sounds just like Lucas Glover, if I ever heard it. Okay, see, I believe this is now the John Markowski portion of the show where we delve into the narrative lineup of the week, but basically it turned into the narrative pun lineup of the week presented by John Markowski.
That's right, and I don't know that we have these to pull up, so I may just have to read them off. So let me start with John's, and then I'll have 3 more to just like quickly run through.
Okay, is there a theme? Is there a theme here? What's the theme?
Well, so for John Markowski, the theme is, if I were to heed advice from Charles Schwab, it is the Charles Schwab challenge after all, here's what I could afford. In other words, if I got good investment advice, here's what I could afford. We start with Scotty Personal Scheffler.
That's so good. By the way, having a personal chef is like, that would be really cool.
Made it. Yeah, you've made it at that point for sure.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Especially if they're like living in your home. I mean, I guess that's probably what you mean by that.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But like, yeah, that would be cool. That would be really cool.
Okay, so we got. So you're trying to whip something up here, Rick. You're not there yet, buddy. Just give it some time. You'll get there, man. Scotty Personal Scheffler, Daniel Kobe Beef Burger, Max Summer Homa in the Hamptons.
Oh my
That's
god,
that's great. That is
okay.
Great.
Got it. Yeah, this is good. Yeah.
Sahith Ticket to the Gala Ball.
Holy crap, John.
Yes, David Lip Ski Vacation in Vail.
Oh my God, John.
Impressive, John. He outdoes himself every week. And then finally is Adam Footlong with the Fixins. So you can eat well too with your personal Scheffler, I suppose.
Sahith Ticket to the Gala Ball.
Max Homa in the Hamptons is pretty great. So let me just run through the other three, which of course aren't going to be as good as John's. I'll just do it really quick. This is from AHS Chargers Golf. AHS Chargers Golf. He is talking about Colonial Figures because it's the Colonial Country Club, of course.
Okay.
Sam Adams Burns, Justin Thomas Jefferson, Doc Redcoat, Aaron Burr Rye, Paul Revere Barjon, and Victor Ree for America Hovland.
Those are good. I like that. That's
solid.
Yeah, sticking with the Colonial. I like that. That's good. Okay.
These are great. And Model Maniac with another submission. Charles Schwab, Board of Directors. This is a fictitious Board of Directors. Millie Billy Horschel, President. Money Max McGreedy, CFO. Harry Six Figs Riggs, Party Planning Committee.
Hell yeah.
Dollar Bill Haas, Treasurer. Bribin' Brian Harmon, the Ethics Committee.
Nice.
And of course, Jason Howdy Saudi Kokrak, International Relations. And finally, Rick, this one's mine.
I'm so when impressed with creativity here.
This is great. Here's mine. When you think challenge, as in Charles Schwab challenge, you think duel, you think rivalry. The Charles Schwab challenge rivalry team at First Cut Pod, Tom Hoagie versus Daniel Berger, versus a burger.
Nice.
Stuart Sink versus Aaron Rise. And then finally, Doc Redman, versus Paterny Kazire. Doc Redman versus Paterny Kazire. And then for the real ones, John Pock versus Brandon Wu-Tang Clan. Strokes Gain Narrative, folks.
The Sink and Rise was so good that even after you explained it to me, it took me like three more seconds. And I was like, oh my God, yeah, that's pretty strong. Wow. We're getting, I mean, I say we as like the community, because I have nothing to do with this. We're getting pretty good at this.
It's solid. The wordplay is, there is not, I'll say this. There is not a show in the podcast or YouTube universe that has the wordplay that the First Cut owns Monday nights at 5:30 Eastern Standard Time.
Hard to argue with that.
Impossible.
Hard to argue with that. Okay. See, we don't have tea times yet, but would you like to give us a little insight into who might be some possible first round leader darts?
Yeah, I put four down here. They might change, and I'll definitely add a fifth like I always do. But I put Sam Burns down at 35-1, Tommy Fleetwood at 40-1, Sebastian Munoz at 50-1, and Nate Lashley at 130-1. So Burns, Fleet, Munoz, Lashley. It's very likely a couple of these change when tee times come out.
I'm going to try not to forget about Lashley, because he was playing well, had that weird WD, played well immediately after. I'm going to try not to forget about him this week.
And for the record, we were a 19-foot putt by Rory McIlroy away from hitting another one of these, because we had I had Will Zalatoris last week. And if he makes par, if Rory makes par on the last hole from 19 feet away, then we're good. We got a split with him and Tom Hoagie.
Yeah, Rory McIlroy was 5-under after round one.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't he have just loved to just freeze at 5-under, get into a playoff? Like, I can't imagine at any point, even when Rory was charging on Sunday, that he thought 5-under was going to be good enough to get into a playoff.
Well, it's crazy because of how he started. I mean, he absolutely could have gotten into that playoff. And what's even crazier, and this is a tweet I saw, because I wasn't doing the math on the time, but I think it was 3:05 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, that I was he already on the back nine that Justin Thomas was still eight shots back of Mito Pereira?
I mean, he was that might be right, because Mito dropped another, four or five, and then he made a couple birdies coming in. I think he played the back nine three under. That could be right.
He was definitely eight back at 3 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, which was an hour into, or almost an hour into Mito's initial tee time on Sunday. It's nuts.
Wild. Wild stuff. We'll be back Tuesday morning, bright and early, for the Mega Preview Pod and round by round recaps for each and every round of the Charles Schwab Challenge. Make sure you get your one and done selections in. The link for the fan vote is in the description right now. Do not hesitate. We're going early on Tuesday. For now, big thanks. How about this, Sia? Big thanks to producer Troy doing all the hard work behind the scenes. That Jacob guy, forget about him. We've got Troy spinning the knobs, pressing the buttons. Did a great job today.
Fantastic job, Troy. Thank you so much. I can't wait to work with Troy. Who's Jacob anyway? I don't even know. I don't even know a Jacob at this point.
If he never comes back, I actually don't know. I think he'll be back. I have no idea. But if he doesn't, we're splitting up his money in the one and done. Everybody but Mark gets his money.
I don't think I deserve his money. I got to be honest.
I'll take your share too. Sia Najad, available on Twitter at Sia Najad. You can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.